Hey everyone, welcome to the first Copper Talk episode of 2017. It is a new year and a new legislative session is coming. And with me today in studio is Luigi Del Puerto with the Arizona Capital Times. He's going to go solo today for this journalist roundtable. It'll be a very small table. Luigi, happy new year. Welcome to the show.
Happy new year. I'm so glad 2016 is over.
No doubt. So 2016 is over. Well, Luigi, what's going on in this busy first week of 2017?
Well, immediately the problem is going to be what to do with the spending. And what I mean by that is that the state only has, I think, about $24 million in what they our lawmakers would refer to as structural balance. That means that ongoing revenues are able to cover ongoing spending. So they have about $24 million. But in the meantime, Speaker Messner and Senate President Yarbrough have essentially tied themselves by telling the Arizona Supreme Court that the state is obligated, is bound, legally bound to fund costs associated with the minimum wage that right. we just passed in November.
And this will be very interesting. There was a lawsuit brought by the chamber to delay the implementation of Prop 206, the minimum wage increase. There was a desire, because there's going to be a hit to the Arizona state budget, and the chamber argues, and Mesnard and incoming Speaker Mesnard and incoming President Yarbrough argue that they must fund some DD, developmentally disabled, and access issues. And we will be having someone on from the DD community after in the next segment. So they've said that they must fund this stuff. So now I guess is it time to fund this, some of these shortfalls that these DD providers and other providers are talking about?
Well, if we believe them, then that's going to happen, right? I mean, that's they mm-hmm. said they're bound to do it. They're legally obligated, the state is legally obligated to provide more, basically raise the reimbursement rates to providers as a result of Prop 206. And I just want to add this note that Mesnard and Yarbrough and the governor's office through OSPB cited Access and numbers, estimates from Access. But Access itself said that while this increase in spending is necessary, it's not obligated. Access is saying, yeah, we probably need to spend more, but we're not obligated to. And Access, in fact, even told the court that it's very important we have discretion whether we want to increase the reimbursement rates or not. And I guess the reason for that is if you know, for one or other reason, there is some thought to the idea that reimbursement rates should increase, and Access doesn't have the discretion whether to do it or not, then it's going to be very difficult to manage our healthcare system. But nonetheless, the incoming speaker and incoming Senate president basically ignored that part of the Access argument and said the chamber's right.
Yeah. So will this be the first big fight of 2017, you know, what to do with the Prop 206 increases that are needed for providers?
Yeah, I think so. And I don't know if it's going to be a fight or not. I mean, it really depends on our three leaders here, including Ducey, Messner, and Yarbrough, if they want to follow through in their word. Because obviously, if we have only $24 million in structural surplus, and the Prop 206 related cost is already going to be $21 million, then you basically have $3 million that's left for the K-12 community, the universities, the, you know, child safety advocates. I mean, you go down the list, and you will see how complicated things are.
So, Luigi, are you going to go out on a limb here and say we're going to start looking at revenue increases?
No, I wouldn't say. I haven't seen this Republican-led legislature do that. But there had been instances when they're forced to do it, or at the very least, send a ballot referral and ask the voters to do an increase in revenues. It's something they don't want to do themselves. They usually just send it to the voters
right.
to
And the voters have been pliant on that. They've shown that both under Brewer and obviously Prop 301 in 2000. So voters have a history of, if you make a good case of why the state needs more money, they have a history of increasing spending or increasing revenues.
Especially when you're talking about the children.
Yep. It's all about the children. Luigi, anything else that we should be looking out for in the next week besides, obviously, the governor's state of the state and the response to that?
Well, incoming Senate President Yarbrough anticipates that the very first bill of the session, and he said it during the chamber lunch a few hours ago, is going to come from John Kavanaugh on a bill that he said would be something insignificant, which I thought was a pretty funny joke.
It was a pretty funny joke. All right, Luigi, we'll cut it short here and let you get back to work putting out the paper and the yellow sheet. Thanks a lot for coming in, and we look forward to hearing from you a lot in the coming future.
All right, thank you.
If you want to know the news before it happens and get the real story behind the story, read the Yellow Sheet Report today. To subscribe, visit yellowsheetreport.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is your host, Barrett Morrison, and today I am here with John Moore, the director of the MARC Center. Is that your director?
Actually, President CEO President from CEO. MARC Community Resources.
Yeah, MARC Community Resources. MARC is a longtime institution in the East Valley that deals a lot with the developmentally disabled community and many other issues out in the East Valley. And we're ostensibly having you in to talk a little bit about Prop 206, the minimum wage increase, and how it affects the DD community. But first, why don't you talk a little bit about what MARC does and its purpose in the East Valley.
It's my pleasure, and thank you for inviting me here today. MARC was actually founded in 1957 by nine families seeking services for their children with developmental disabilities, including autism, cerebral palsy, epilepsy, and intellectual disabilities. In the 50s, pediatricians commonly recommended that parents place their children in state-run institutions, and there was no free and public education. That didn't happen until the mid-70s. Today, MARC is in its 60th year. And it serves about 4,500 individuals with developmental disabilities, general mental health, substance abuse, and serious mental illness. We provide a variety of services, housing supports, employment day programs, counseling, health and wellness, family support, veteran services, and much more. And these services help people achieve their full potential and live a meaningful life, something that we all aspire to. Basically, this means that they have the opportunity to pursue health, happiness, and the greatest level of independence possible, including getting a job. And one thing I always like to say, people need to know and understand that a severe disability doesn't make someone lesser of a person. It doesn't diminish dreams. It doesn't decrease the need for friendships, love, purpose, and meaning. It doesn't reduce the desire to be self-sufficient, have a job, and be happy. In fact, we like to say that our product, even though we provide lots of services, is really happiness. MARC helps people define what quality of life means to them, and then we help them achieve it. Yeah.
Now, do you have group homes, or are they all more day programs and going into the community and helping people where they live? Or
right. There's always a continuum in our organization. So housing, we have structured group home residential settings where that is their home, and we really structure the day for the individuals. We have also in-homes, all the way down to in-home supports, where we just go into someone's home for a few hours, and then in between that is what I call community housing, independent housing, where people live out in the community. They have leases, but they just need some help, wraparound supports, to be successful and independent in the community. So we have the full continuum.
Now, I do want to talk a little bit about a very specific part of your organization, and there are many organizations like yours that do this work, but for the developmentally disabled, you have a lot of day programs to bring in, and I call them kids, but they're not just kids, they are adults and even seniors, and you help families deal long-term with with their relatives who are developmentally disabled. Talk a little bit about those programs.
Well, you know, we have a real continuum. So, for example, we have day programs, which we like to say helps keep the family unit intact. Mom and dad can continue to work while son or daughter is in a program during the day focused on self-sufficiency, socialization, and community integration. And community integration is really important. We want people to be out in the community. We want them to be learning life skills in the community. We want them to be enjoying the resources and recreation that the community has to offer, just like any other citizen. So day programs are really important. We also are one of the largest employment providers, training programs for individuals with disabilities in the state of Arizona. And we have a continuum there as well, all the way from what we call center-based training, where we contract with corporations to assemble their final product and deliver to Costco's and Target's, to community work crews that work in bashes and other stores side by side with general population doing the same work, building resumes so that they can get a job potentially somewhere else or get hired by bashes and the businesses they're working in, all the way to direct placement in the community. It just depends on what the person chooses. And we also have, as I mentioned earlier, in-home supports that provide a variety of personal assistance and living skills in the individual's home if they're living with family or if they're living by themselves.
Great. So, there have been a lot of news stories about, there have been lawsuits. I think we even joined the lawsuit with with the chamber that was also supported by legislative leaders. But Prop 206, the minimum wage increase, brings the minimum wage to $10 an hour. A lot of your employees were earning in the $8 and $9 range. So obviously you have had to bump them up and incurred an expense. And then obviously bump up people who are making just $10 an hour, supervisors or whatever. Tell me what the financial impact is upon the Mark Center of the Prop 206 vote.
My pleasure. This is a really serious issue. I would like to take one step back, though, because it's really important to understand the background even before Prop 206 comes into play. Prior to Prop 206, the entire DD system of care really was in a financial crisis, dating back to the Great Recession 2009, when the state legislature had no choice but to make deep cuts. Those temporary cuts have not been restored. Unlike most industry groups, our significant need has been verified by the state's own independent experts. Burns & Associates in 2014 calculated and reported that DD service rates are funded at just under 80% of what they should be. In 2015, Burns & Associates reported that the number of providers like our agency dropped from 1,800 to 650 and stated, and I quote, "rates are largely inadequate." So there's really no debate that that service funding is severely underfunded. And also, every year the state adds new administrative rules without funding the cost. For example, this year the state now requires that we input all staff training into their online focus system, and we're going to have to bring on new resources to handle this administrative task. But this is that's just one example that happens every year. So then comes Prop 206. As a CEO of Mark, I don't take a pro or con stance on that. But when it passed, all DD providers' wage costs skyrocketed about 16%. For DD programs at Mark, our costs will go up about $1 million. And when you're funded at about 80% of the benchmark, what it costs, you can't really absorb any new costs. And we are not like a traditional business. We are not McDonald's. We cannot increase our prices. We don't control that. The state does. We can't cut our labor costs either, since we have required ratios to maintain.
And I do want to ask about that. It's true. You cannot. A lot of businesses will cut back on staff if their costs get too high. You can't do that, though.
No, since 2009, we've done the things that businesses do to balance revenue and expense. We've cut out middle management. We've gutted benefits. We haven't had a merit increase for inflation and performance since 2009. So we've done what we can to balance the unfortunate situation that the Great Recession brought our way. But we really can't cut. Virtually all of our DD staff now are direct care staff who have to maintain a certain ratio. Every staff hour that we cut actually also cuts revenue simultaneous. So you really can't get any savings from reducing staff.
And so how much is it that you are anticipating in real dollars that Prop 206 is going to mean for Mark?
Well, Prop 206 for us is going to cost us about $1 million this year. This doesn't take into account the further step up in minimum wage going forward. That just covers the cost to get up to $10, and that covers the cost for the sick pay for part-time staff.
Right.
So it's about $1 million, and then going forward, there will be additional cost increases as minimum wage increases.
And that's just not something that someone like and how first of all. About how many people do you serve in the developmentally disabled community?
Well, we serve about 4,500 individuals total, mm-hmm. but about 1,000 of that are individuals in our programs for individuals with developmental disabilities.
Right. And you serve 1,000. How many other agencies or entities like you, and how many people do they serve in Arizona?
Well, there's about 650 providers. Most of them are small mom and pops. We're one of the larger. Our total revenue is about $11.6 million. That probably puts us in the top 10. We're not the largest, but we're up there. The total number of people in the public Medicaid DDD system is about 35,000 in Arizona.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
That is a lot. So now, how does Mark and other agencies like yourself, how do you guys deal with the rate increase, or I'm sorry, the minimum wage increase and the extra money that you will have to give out now?
Well, that's a great question. There isn't a lot of cash reserves in provider agencies because we've been dealing with underfunding since 2009. Agencies that are diversified, and like Mark, we do have a couple of funding sources, and we've been around for 60 years. We have closer to 60 days of cash on hand. We're actually one of the stronger agencies in the DD system. 60 days of cash isn't a lot of money, and we're one of the strongest. So the DD system is very fragile. It is completely and totally dependent on actions taken by legislators in the governor's office going forward to increase rates. There's really not a lot that we can do at this point, given that we've come we're in our eighth year of being funded at significantly below what it really costs to deliver the business.
So as the legislative session starts, what is the DD community asking from the legislature?
Well, the DD community is really incredibly diversified. It's very difficult to get one answer. For example, if you because there's so many small mom and pops, there are many organizations that just deliver one type of service. And if I only deliver nursing or therapies, I'm not really impacted by Prop 206. If I deliver services that staff are primarily paid $12, $13, $14, I'm not really impacted. Mark is one of the larger agencies. It has many of the programs that the DD funds. And so I can tell you our situation. The emergency funding that came out that will cover the first 6 months of 2017 is a great start, but it doesn't cover the direct costs of Prop 206. For our agency, only it covers about 65-70% of the direct costs. It's a giant help, and it will help an organization like ours get through the first couple months of the legislative session. There are many agencies that aren't blessed with 60 days of cash on hand that are going to be really taxed. There'll be some agencies, I predict, that will likely go out of business or get folded into other agencies. And other agencies will just bleed their cash reserves waiting for the state legislature to act.
Mm-hmm. What happens if the legislature doesn't act?
Well, there's a number of things that that will happen. For example, I see a further deterioration of our direct care employee applicant pool in quality of services. And what I mean by that is that we have a hard time actually hiring people to do the work, the hard physical and emotional work for the wage that we can offer. And that means the individuals, it's very hard to find qualified individuals with computer skills and communication skills and all the things that we need to do. And that means we have lots of vacancies, which means we have high turnover and high hiring costs. I also see increases in safety risks and incidences as people try to cut back anywhere that they can. I see fewer providers and reduced choices to families. I see waiting lists for services. I see much greater burden on families as they are, as their children can't be in programs, which will force them parents to quit jobs and potentially lose their insurance coverage. And I also see less services to individuals and an increase in individuals staying at home in isolation.
Mm. All right. Well, I hate to sort of end it on that sad note, but we do have to get moving on. But I know you guys are going to be down at the Capitol for the first few weeks and really lobbying legislators on this issue. So I'm sure we'll hear more from you, John.
Can I leave you with one note?
Absolutely.
We tell our employees to treat our service recipients like they are your precious family. So my overarching message to our listeners, legislators, fund DD programs like you would if your family was the customer, your precious aging parent or your precious child with a severe disability.
Okay. Hey, John, thanks a lot for coming in. Really appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll check in with you again before session is over.
Thank you very much.
Sam, Marilyn, Matt.
Barrett.
Welcome back to 2017, or welcome to 2017.
Great to be here.
Oh, happy yeah, you know, a whole new year, same podcast. as your podcast host,
we're deep in the triple digits.
We're deep in the triple digits?
Episode 101.
Oh, yeah. We're episode 101. That is correct. That is correct. Hey, since we are in a new year, we'll go around and just talk about a little bit about who we are, give our little biographies real quick, because there have been some changes amongst your favorite podcasters.
Excellent.
So, Sam, we'll start with you.
Yeah. So, hello, everybody. Sam Richard. I'm the executive director with PAFCO, Protecting Arizona's Family Coalition, and happy to be here and lend a voice from the left to this august body.
Marilyn Rodriguez here. I'm a contract lobbyist with Veritas. We're a bipartisan firm. We have a number of contract clients. I also do some work on the side for Gabriel's Angels and One Community for Equal Protection.
What is Gabriel's Angels?
Gabriel's Angels is pet therapy for at-risk youth. Oh. And on February 7th, which happens to be the Cable Association Day at the Capitol, thank you to all of you at the Cable Association who are sponsoring. We will be there with our pet therapy teams and cookies. So please stop by for a friendly puppy hug.
Oh. All right, Matt, what about you?
Formerly of the dark side, like Marilyn, but now I'm the new director of government affairs for the newly elected Maricopa County Recorder, Adrian Fontes.
Oh, wow.
That's like a fancy way to say Should I say yeah. Adrian Fontes?
Yeah.
if she can say Rodriguez, yeah. I can say that.
And Barrett Marson here, and I'm just a PR guru for hire by almost anyone.
Marson.
Anyways. All right. So we've heard from journalists earlier, and we heard from the developmentally disabled community about sort of what they hope for and what they expect in the session. I thought we would talk a little bit about that. First, from our Democrats on the panel, Sam, what do you think is going to be the big issue this year, and how do you think the legislature will actually deal with that big issue?
So I think one of the things that we're going to be looking at right away as we start is who emerges from the bottleneck from the get-go. We have, by most reports, about $25 million of money that's quote-unquote available. OSPB,
in the proverbial box.
Yes, in the proverbial box. OSPB might come up with a higher number than that because, you know, governors tend to say there's more revenue, so there's more money to spend, so we might see what's happening there. But if Proposition 206 continues to go through as it has so far through the legal system, we might see access, as was mentioned before in the interview, you know, eat up about $21 million of that 24. Obviously, K-12 or P-20, as the community wants to start calling it now too, is trying to get their chunk of the pie for education. So it's really going to see, it's going to be seen, as of yet to be seen, who emerges from that bottleneck first. But that's going to be the first fight, is prioritizing who gets chunks out of that pie.
Marilyn?
Well, aside from the budget stuff that I think Sam just covered really well, your big issues are going to be licensing reform. I think that's going to fall under to the general criminal justice reform conversation we're seeing pick up steam. It looks like now more than ever you have people on the left and right willing to look at things like expungement, like truth in sentencing, like civil asset forfeiture. Full disclosure, I am retained by U.S. Justice Action Network to work on a few of those. But in my conversations about that, I've been finding that more and more are very much in favor of reform. And then beyond that...
You know, I do want to hit on something I thought was interesting. I thought I saw a note that Attorney General Mark Brnovich has asked for more state general fund dollars so that they could, his office can be weaned off of civil asset forfeiture.
Yes, you did.
I thought
see
that was very interesting.
I did too. We'll see what the coalition looks like when it gets rolling, but it's looking pretty promising. And then, you know, beyond that, I think with Michael Hunter as chief of staff in the House, you're going to see a lot of those like libertarian civil liberties conversations take place in the House, maybe get a little further than they would have previously. And then you have some members trying to make a name for themselves. There's a lot of new faces, and they want to bring something home to their districts, some of whom may even want to run for Senate or House in the other chamber next year. So one bill that I think is really interesting, I met Representative-elect Kevin Payne yesterday, which apparently he's infamous for his barbecue. I have not had it, but everybody speaks volumes about it. I don't know. We'll have to see. We'll have to have him on, and we'll do like a taste test or something. But he wants to go back to the beginning of time for the Arizona State Legislature and find out. He wants to document each and every single resolution that has been passed, every postcard to Congress, and just archive it. So we, because I guess we don't keep track of that. We don't know what we've sent. We don't know what we've called back. We don't know what needs to be called back.
I must say. Talk about it was useless to pass those resolutions. I tell you right now, it'll be even more useless to go figure out what resolutions.
I think it's really interesting.
Don't we have a state librarian and a state historian to do that?
Yeah, but apparently they don't. So I think you're. And speaking of state librarian and the archivist, the Secretary of State's office put out that they are going to have an elections reform bill, and I know that Matt is going to be very involved with that. My partner, Joel Edmond, is the executive director, new, of the Arizona Advocacy Network, and I hear all about it all the time now. But it looks like it's going to be a big push.
Yeah, I do believe that election reform is, again, going to be a big issue come this session. The Secretary of State has 8 pages long, and I'm sure we'll probably have Mr. Fontes or Mr. Spencer and other elections officials in to talk about that, because I think it's going to be some, you know, election reform has occurred over the last couple sessions, and much to the chagrin of folks like you over there, Sam.
Well, we're on the heels of it isn't just Dems. We're on the heels of a historic election year where we had 4 statewide elections, which is more than any other Secretary of State or any individual who runs elections has ever had to.
Is this the part where the guy who's the
look over?
The lobbyist for democracy and voting steps in? Anyway, yes, you're right. There's going to be a ton of elections reform. But I have to agree with Marilyn, and it kind of irks me inside a little bit. But that 1516 that came out last year, we're starting to see the effects as of this week. And a 4-page campaign finance filing is now a 65-page filing that came out and didn't have any instructions on it. And those of us that have ran in the past or people who are having to do campaign finance filings within the next week have a going to get a hit in the head with a big brick of papers.
You know, don't run for office.
Is that the
another
lesson?
Another reason not to run for office.
Oh, my God. You should have told me that last year, Barrett.
Before we leave the Secretary of State's office, just a fun little tidbit as we go into session for all you railbirds. Secretary Reagan just posted on her Twitter page today that the coffee shop that will be in the old Capitol will be open and ready for our consumption of caffeine.
Is that Monday?
On Monday.
Cannot wait.
Yeah, you know, I'll say I remember Speaker Wires tried desperately to figure out a way to get a Starbucks-like coffee shop at the Capitol because he knew it would be a huge moneymaker. So
I thought Shooter was lobbying for a bar in the Senate, right?
Well, it's his office.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah.
It's just his office. You just got to know the secret. Yeah.
So some changes that I think are interesting and everybody will want to hear. The legislature has come out with some guidance for intro sets and custom and practice around bills. So proposed changes to state law are the sole responsibility of the state legislature. Recently, the conversation about lobbyists carrying around bill folders has irked some.
Oh, it's irked many.
In the community. So the House actually just posted this policy that only lawmakers are to be carrying around intro sets.
That's a good change from incoming Speaker Mesner.
Yeah, and another new change that I think is going to be interesting for like game theory out there is the custom of hearing bills in the order of the committee they were assigned to first, and this includes it excludes rules, is now gone. So
we have no way to know what's going to come up?
We have no way to know what order a bill that is multiple assigned is going to be heard. So if there's room for it on the calendar and, say, a probes committee has a light week, they can hear it even if, say, elections committee is bogged down.
This sounds to me like agenda dodgeball.
It's going to be weird. floor amendments are due 4 p.m. day prior to the committee of the whole. And amendments from other members and staff will be confidential until 10 a.m. the next day. So that's like right before COW. So those are the big ones. This just came out. I think they'll probably post it on the House of Representatives press release section. Go ahead and take a look at that.
Sounds to me like Speaker Mesner is starting to pull some old rules back to the forefront.
I'm kind of bummed that he got rid of it's my favorite rule because it's so ridiculous. The butts and seats rule, where during voting you cannot stand up and walk around. So what ensued, of course, was just people rolling around the floor in their chair.
Roller chair hockey. Yeah.
It looked so obnoxious, but that's gone. You can get up now.
Well, I think in this session, I think you're going to see education play a big part, big role. There's going to be a lot of talk and a lot of ideas. It will be a challenge to put any new dollars into education. I think you can play the game of we're going to make sure dollars go to the classrooms and, you know, play with administrative costs and things like that. But it's going to be difficult. I think the biggest thing that we could see is the early referral to the ballot of a Prop 301, six tenths of a cent sales tax referral to the ballot. And that'll be interesting to see if it's just the 6/10 of a cent, if it goes up to the full penny, which would be another 400, give or take, million, which would be a huge boost to schools.
I've heard as high as 1.6.
Right.
Which I don't know if it's a bargaining chip, but that would add an extra
million. I think if it went up to the 1 cent, I still think voters would absolutely support that. They have shown time and again that they will support increased funding for education. However, they won't support it if you light it up like a Christmas tree and you put all kinds of ornaments on it and you carve out special gifts to various groups. It's got to be very similar to what happened in 301 and just maybe the increase in the amount. So I'm looking forward to that. And I think, schools, there's probably a lot of stuff that they want to do that doesn't cost money. So that'll be good. And I think the election changes, those are going to be some of our bigger topics this year.
And you know, we haven't really mentioned it outside of the 206 conversation, but healthcare in Arizona is going to be a huge issue, particularly because of what's happening federally.
At the federal level, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be, we don't know how it will impact Arizona because it's so monstrous and it's so not controlled by Arizona, of course. I mean, we get more than $2 billion worth of just economic aid from through Obamacare and
the Affordable Care Act, whatever.
ACA. Obviously, we went through a massive fight 5 years ago, 4 years ago on Medicaid expansion. That could all go away if the ACA goes away. Yes. So that'll be interesting. But I don't even know that that will happen this session because we don't. It's so controlled at the congressional level.
Right.
But you know, one issue that I don't think will take any kind of time away from us? Immigration.
Hmm.
Think about the Arizona legislature not dealing with illegal immigration in a year. That hasn't really happened much.
Well, that's because Russell Pierce is not at the...
Sure. that has a lot to do with it. But I just, you know, it, you know, not in the recent, not in the too far distant past, it was all immigration all the time around here. Mm-hmm. From our border fence fund that Steve Smith had to 1070 and children of 1070 and all that stuff. And now, you know, I don't know.
Do those funds now get forwarded to president-elect?
I think those funds will pay for some coffee at the new coffee shop, and that's about it. All right. So
can we bring up Prop 206 real quick?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we talked a lot about that in the interviewing with the journalist, but...
I know, Sam, Marilyn, you guys are all for it, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But definitely. Have you seen some of the repercussions that have come from this?
Oh my gosh!
Okay, we're going to talk about it.
So I want to call out one of these because this is something that Glenn Hammer tweeted out and that the media picked up on.
Okay,
there was a coffee shop in Flagstaff called Cultural Cafe that closed, and they said they're closing because of Proposition 206 and Proposition 414, which is the municipally focused version of Prop 206. But the reality is the owners of Cultural Cafe have had that business for sale. Because they plan to move to Tennessee to raise their family. And...
Who goes to Tennessee to raise
their family? No one goes there by
but, on purpose. And a Dutch Brothers opened up across the street. Ooh. So if the business community is going to continue to try and prop up straw men in defense of Proposition 206 being a bad idea, I suggest that they do better research.
Well, I've had several conversations with several restaurant and bar owners here in the Valley. And... The wage increase actually doesn't bother them. It's the PTO part that they're afraid of, and they're watching.
The pay time off.
They're really, they're more than happy to pay their employees more money that are doing really good jobs for them. But the stack up of the amount of PTO that's going to be that they're going to be left with, it worries them, and they're worried. I mean, they're batting down the hatches. Some are raising their prices a little bit so that they can weather through. But if there's something we can do to either push it back with the PTO or arrange the PTO in a certain fashion that people can consume that cost better, there's got to be a way that we should reapproach it. But do we really think that it's going to get knocked back in the courts?
I don't think there's legal standing. I'm not a lawyer, but I
you dress like one.
I don't think that it meets the single subject. I mean, I don't think that it doesn't meet the single subject clause. And even Access itself admitted that it does not force the state to increase costs.
Marilyn?
I don't have more to add to this. We keep lobbing anecdotal bullshit at one another about this fight.
I thought that's what being a Democrat's all about.
Oh, my gosh. Everything Sam has said, plus one, and if we want to have an intelligent conversation about this, let's bring in Prop 206 or an employment lawyer and really talk about the real issues. But until we can do that, I'm sick of the recriminations of this argument.
Right. And just to put a pin on it,
I think she just set the agenda.
There are 21 states across the country that have instituted some kind of increase to the minimum wage. So I think eventually, once we get data back from this, the conversation should be over because we will have data whether raising the minimum wage is good or bad for the economy. We'll have a majority of states that have done it. We'll be able to case test it, and we'll know moving forward whether it's good or bad. I think this side of the table thinks it's really good, and I think that the data will bear out to prove that.
Hey, I just can't believe my 16-year-old daughter got a huge pay increase. She's like, oh, I'm making $11 an hour. And I'm like, what?
You tell her she can pay for her own car insurance?
Yeah, exactly. All right. All right, everybody. Hey, great first show of the year. And let the games begin.
Here comes the gavel.
See you next week.